You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 127 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. I'm joined today by a very, very specially manly Van Lee. What's up, Van?
Very specially manly. That's me. I'm happy to be here, and I would like to point out to maybe listeners who are kind of new to the podcast or haven't listened for that long that none of the three of us are all in the same room.
Or nude to the podcast.
Nude to the podcast. Nathan, you're in North Dakota. Ron's in Florida. I'm in Missouri. So we've really technologically bridged the gap. But what I would like to point out about that is that I am, in fact, a safe, non-fistable distance away from the both of you.
That didn't take long. Nice throwback to the podcast we just did yesterday, the Game of Thrones cast, baby. That was a lot of fun.
That was great. Yeah, listen to it if you haven't already.
Even if you don't watch Game of Thrones, just download it.
Well, I was going to say, is if I listen to the podcast you guys did, would that be kind of a Cliff Notes version and get me caught up? I mean, I've got it on my to-do list. I want to watch it, but would I be able to understand enough to hop in now, or do I need to just start from the beginning and just power through?
You would definitely start from the beginning. Yeah.
Okay. Do not listen to the pod. That should be the last thing you do is listen. Okay. That's literally so nothing but spoilers.
Spoilers abound in there.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
That's okay. Primarily what we discussed.
All right. All right. I'll catch up with the series, and then I'll put the podcast at the very end so you guys can kind of put a nice little bow on what I've watched.
Perfect.
Awesome. There okay. Cool.
Coming up this Sunday. I'm stoked. But anyway, we got an announcement to make right at the top of the show, and might as well get that out of the way, because the guys, if you listen to the BG Baseball podcast, they actually mentioned this earlier in the week, and that is that the NastyCast is going to be joining the Fantrax family. We're going to be part of the series of podcasts that they will be having on the brand spanking new Fantrax Radio. So you'll be able to find us there while you're setting all your lineups on Fantrax. So, yay us!
Woo! Party!
So that's cool. So if you're, I'm not exactly sure when they're going to be done with that. I don't know if they're sure when they're going to be done with that and get us up. But hey, if you're listening on the website, give us a shout out. You can find us on Twitter at NastyCastBGFS. Already gave my handle. Of course, Van is at Manly Van Lee, and Ron is over at The Real Maday, M-A-D-A-Y.
Can I ask real quick what that is, Ron? I have no idea.
Yeah, so long story short, Made is a childhood nickname that I was kind of stuck with when I – see, okay, I'll try to give you the abridged version. My middle initial – I just have a middle initial as J, and you know how you have your parents will call you certain things until you're like 50 years old. They still call you that.
Sure.
So my parents call me Ronnie J, and so I had a friend of mine that his little brother would try to say that, but he didn't speak very well. He's only like 3, so it came out Made. So – when I was younger, that was kind of what he called me. And then he was about 6 years older, about 4 years older than me, 3 years older than me, somewhere around there. Anyway, the way it worked out is he was, that nickname kind of went away until I became a freshman in high school, and he was a senior. And so my friend Brett saw me first day of freshman year, and he's like, hey, Made is here. And then everybody's like, what does that mean? And so ever since then, that's essentially when I go back to my hometown, that's what I'm known as. Like, there's people that know me by that name, but don't know my real name.
Interesting. So it's stuck that way, yeah.
It's stuck that way, and you know, everybody that I know from there will call me that every time I talk to them on the phone or anything. So
very nice. A very deep insight into the look of Ron Rigney.
Yes, yes, yes.
There you go. Get to know your hosts right there. The more you know. So yeah.
It's half the battle. So
yeah, whether you're a new listener or a nude listener, please let us know.
Or maybe both.
Newly nude listener.
If you were listening to us clothed and now you're nude, you know.
Well, good for you. I'm a little concerned, but good for you. Sure.
Stop touching it. Stop.
Sorry.
You can. There you go. Be sure to go to bigguyfantasysports.com to check out all of our written work and find links to all the podcasts that will still be there in addition to Fantrax. And, of course, you can purchase Bob Lung's 2017 Consistency Guide there as well for fantasy football freaks out there. He's been promoting the crap out of it. He was on with Lisa Ann and Howard Bender today on SiriusXM. I haven't had a chance to listen yet. I'm sure it's on demand. I'm gonna try and go back and check that out.
It was cool. I caught it. It was good. It was very good.
Right on. Big fan of that show. And of course, please, if you enjoy the show, give us a rate and review. It makes us feel all warm and fuzzy inside. And you can get some free Dud's Pretzels that way. Do not forget, we are still sponsored by Dud's Pretzels. And if you leave us a written review and let us know that you did it, then I'll ship your ass some delicious Dud's Pretzels. I'm going to clip that for sure.
That's all I have to add to that is just because that's all that needs to be said.
Yeah, that's the most accurate thing you can add to that.
They're the greatest pretzels in all the land.
I'm telling you, there are pretzels and then there are Dots pretzels. It shouldn't even be in the same like spectrum as normal pretzels. That's how good Dots pretzels are.
It should be its own thing, really. Absolutely. But you have to sort of define it as a pretzel or else people would really be lost.
Yep.
But it does defy pretzel.
And I don't know if I brought this up a couple weeks ago, but I was looking kind of to plan out my next order of Dots pretzels. And I noticed you can get the seasoning as like a steak rub.
A rub, yeah. Yeah, it's good. Amazing. It's so
I'm
good.
Excited.
I've done it on chicken. You just basically rub it on there, put some oil on there, which is a great thing to say, and then burn it a bit, and it's good to go.
You lost me at that last bit there. I don't know. Just
oil and rubbing, sure.
Yeah, that's good enough for me. I'm not into that kinky shit. But Ron, let's talk to you, man. You're out at the Futures game. Let's get the experience from you. How'd that go?
Very cool, very cool. The one thing I want to say before I talk about any individual players is it's sad the fact, and I don't know, Nate, how it was when you went a few years ago, but it was an empty stadium.
And I noticed that. I was watching just the beginning. I haven't got to watch the whole game yet, but just even from like the photos from the batting practice and like the seats were just, they're all empty. And that was a lot different from like even during batting practice at Minnesota when it was there a couple years ago. It wasn't packed for batting practice, but there was more people there for batting practice than I think the start of the actual game.
That's right. And we missed, they must have had the U.S. team do batting practice before they opened the gates at 2. The game was at 4. We got there at 2. Got to see the world batting practice. It wasn't a lot of people hitting them out. I mean, there was some solid contact there. And it's kind of cool to just see everybody take their turn in there. But what was sad about it was the fact that more people seemed to be showing up for the celebrity softball. Because we're sitting there.
Yeah.
We're sitting there in about the 5th and 6th inning. And so the place starts to kind of fill up a little bit. You see people like going to their seats. And I'm like, and I turned to my buddy and I'm like, why would you come here now for this? And then I'm thinking, oh, they're coming here for the celebrity softball. So by the time we left about the top of the ninth, and there was way more people there than there was for the start of the Futures game. So MLB needs to really think about, because I think one of the things that hurts it is it doesn't get the notoriety I think it deserves, because they're still playing a full slate of games on that Sunday. And I thought that was a little strange, because when you think about like the NBA All-Star Weekend, when they have the dunk contest and they have the three-point shootout and the skills competition and all that, that's kind of their marquee thing for that day, and they don't have games going on. You had, you know, people even next to me, even I'm checking, you know, my fantasy teams and stuff, and I think they need to do a better job of maybe trying to promote it as its own thing and not having games going on. But overall, I mean, it was a cool thing. I mean, we were sitting, I think, on the first base side about 20 rows up. My ticket cost me $6.75 to go.
Jeez. Wow.
And, you know, the sad thing about it, too, is it's probably the only time I will get to do that, because with the way that there were, I believe I looked Tuesday morning at Home Run Derby and All-Star tickets on StubHub, and there were over 2,000 of each of them. And I think the lowest you could get was about $135 for each, which was insane. I mean, that's about what it costs to go get a good seat at an NBA game, and this is the All-Star game for MLB. So overall, the game was cool. I mean, I was a little disappointed because there wasn't really a lot of power shown, but there was a lot of solid baseball. Brent Honeywell, the first guy I'm going to talk about, started the game, pitched 2 innings, 4 Ks, looked awesome, had all the breaking pitches working. He was the game MVP. I think he was the first pitcher that's ever got the MVP. So he was the real deal. It was cool to see, because I don't know if I've ever seen anybody in person throw 100 that close. And there was a couple guys that did it, but Michael Kopic got up there and was throwing 100, 101. And from that angle, because we were about right even with the pitcher's mound, it was like he was throwing like a missile, like a dart or something. It was crazy. And he made a couple of guys look kind of silly. Ronald Acuna was a guy that played the entire game. And I thought it was kind of interesting because both of the coaching staffs on both sides didn't really start subbing guys in until about the sixth inning, which I thought they'd try to get some of the guys that came off the bench a few more ABs. But Acuna played the whole game, went 0 for 4. But I'm telling you, as far as tools, as far as what he's got, I mean, you got to think he's only 19. That kid's going to be the real deal. I mean, I think he's really legit. You know, we talked about him a little bit. I haven't previewed him in the on-deck circle just because one of the things that you're looking at when you see a lot of these guys is you get an idea of, yeah, they have the physical tools, but they're still pretty far away. And I think he's one of those guys that's – I don't think we're going to see him this year. I think next year is more of a likely scenario. My favorite play of the game probably was a play that didn't even count for anything. Acuna's in center field. Somebody popped out to him. I can't remember off the top of my head who it was, and I think Derek Fisher was at the Astros prospect. Either Derek Fisher or Kyle Tucker was at third base tagging up. And Acuna was about maybe 2 feet from the 407 sign in center field. Makes a routine catch, and you can see that the guy at third is getting ready to tag up. And I think it was a case of Acuna just thinking he couldn't get the guy. He catches the ball. He takes about a half step, doesn't even really move his body, throws it all with his arm, and throws this laser to home plate that bounced, and the catcher still got it and almost applied the tag and almost got him out. But it was amazing how he just kind of half-assed the throw and still almost got the guy from that deep. It was amazing. So Acuna was, even though he was 0 for 4 at the plate, he was pretty impressive in the field. Defensively, Brendan Rodgers looked good. He had a couple solid plays at second base. I know if you search up the game on MLB.com, they had one of his probably the best defensive play of the game there at second. He made a nice stab on one and threw the guy out at first. Vlad Jr. was for the world team, because it took the world team a while for the bats to wake up a little bit. But Vlad Jr. looked like Vlad Sr., just going to get in a couple of pitches and just getting a couple solid base hits, starting some rallies. Guy that I know, Van, you'll be happy to hear about, double-A Anaheim guy, Jaime Barria. Mm-hmm. Was pretty impressed with him later on in the game. Real smooth delivery, had the fastball kind of in the low 90s. Struck out a couple of guys in one inning. I think the one time that Acuna struck out, I think it was to Barria, if I remember correctly. And then a guy that we'll talk about, the Dynasty Guru 500 later on, a guy that was on there, and I put him on my list for that too. And somebody that I wasn't familiar with before the game, Brewers prospect Mauricio Dubon.
That's not infield. A real person. Come on.
it kind of reminded me of like Super Mario before he eats the mushroom, because he's not really big. He's really fast, but he's a speed prospect, plays second base, looked decent defensively, but he got a base knock and was just lightning from home to first. So he's a guy that I kind of put on my radar a little bit. And he was also part of, I didn't realize where he came from, but he was actually a Red Sox prospect that came over with Travis Shaw for Tyler Thornburg. And I was looking at that, and that's kind of on a side note, but it seems like the Red Sox kind of got hosed on that one a little bit. But he's a guy that I put on the radar. But overall, I mean, it's one of these, the game was one of these things. It was 13 runs scored. There was 19 hits. Just, it had a little bit of everything except, like I said, the home runs. But overall, it was really cool to go to. It's something that, like I said, I probably won't have the chance to do again, but it was one of those things I checked off the sports list of things that I wanted to do. But overall, it was a good time.
So really? Is there a player that you saw there that maybe you have less interest in after you saw him in person?
Yeah, actually, I mentioned before we talked about it, Josh Naylor was a guy that I have in a couple of leagues as far as a power prospect at first base. And it's funny because when we were looking at batting practice, I was looking over and I thought at first, based on the shape that he is in, he was on the coaching staff. Because you had guys like Prince Rhea and these guys that are all, you know, a little bit out of shape, and rightfully so. You know, Levon Hernandez was there. And so I look and he turns around and it says Naylor. And I'm like, well, wait a minute now. And so Josh Naylor needs to get a hold of a dietitian pretty soon, because it's a good thing he plays first base. Just not impressive at all, just as far as the shape. I mean, I think he had a base hit and looked okay, but overall, nothing real impressive with him. Lewis Brinson was there, and I wrote about him in the On Deck Circle this week because I wrote about the best and worst call-ups, and unfortunately he got my vote for worst call-up, not because of the tools. I think he'll be back, but he had a nice swipe at second base where he slid in feet first, and the throw wasn't even close. But if I had to pick a guy that I wasn't real impressed with, I would say definitely Josh Naylor. He also had a mess up at first base where he got caught in a rundown on a pickoff move where he just, I don't know if he just wasn't paying attention, but I think it also, you know, the fact that he's not probably the most fleet of foot out there, I think that helps, you know, that kind of worked against him a little bit. But if I had to pick one, I'd say Josh Naylor was.
I gotta say, like, how hard is it, if you're a professional athlete, seriously, how hard is it to just get on a treadmill and run 3 miles a day? That's all it takes. Like, all you have to do is not eat an entire lasagna, run a couple miles a day, and you will not be fat.
That's like your job. Like, I have to go to work for 8 to 10 hours a day. If I didn't have to do that every day, I could definitely go to the gym for 3 hours a day. Who cares? It'd be easy. I looked up pictures of Naylor here. Yeah, he makes Justin Bour look fit.
Yeah, and the thing was, they flashed a picture of him on the screen, and my buddy looks at him and he goes, "Who the hell is that posing for his picture? Because that sure as hell ain't Josh Naylor." But Mike Soroka got hit around a little bit too, and I don't think that doesn't make me like him any less, but it just seemed like he had kind of a rough inning. But but overall, I mean, those are probably the two that were the most disappointing. I mean, like I said too, it was just disappointing that people showed up for you know, to see, because I got the program here and I was looking at the roster for the celebrity softball. I mean, more people wanted to see Abraham from The Walking Dead hit a softball than they did. They wanted to see the best prospects in the game, actually. So. But he was like the only person other than athletes that I even knew who they were.
Yeah, that's, I got to say, Ron, that I had a similar experience even in Minnesota, where presumably the fan base is a little bit more not dead than it is in Miami. But yeah, like the stands were packed for that celebrity softball game, and they're about 50% full, I'd say, for the prospects. So people just don't have as much interest in that as, you know, folks like us do. They want to see. And there was like, I mean, there was some pretty good people that we had at ours. There's like Adrian Peterson and Larry Fitzgerald and some other real big celebrity. Yeah. Like Nelly was there. So it was a pretty good crowd. So I could see that, but.
I mean, they had some big names there. I mean, we obviously didn't stick around for it. I mean, you had Tim Raines, Pudge Rodriguez, Ricky Henderson, Hawk Dawson, Jason Taylor played in it. So, I mean, there were some people there that were cool. But, you know, I mean, for us, though, that to me, the Futures game is more interesting than the All-Star game. And I think if you play the Dynasty and you play, you know, you're into it as much as we are, you know, that you're going to always go for that over the other events, no matter what. And it just worked out too that it was just so dirt cheap to go to, but it was a hell of a lot of fun, man.
Joey Chestnut, by the way, my personal hero.
Was he there?
He was. He looked like Josh Naylor rounding the bases.
How much did he eat? Did he just eat while he was playing, or?
You know, I didn't watch it very closely. I didn't watch anywhere near all of the game, but when I left the room, the wife was saying that he was actually eating hot dogs with the commentators.
Good.
In between innings. So.
Oh, so he was at the softball game then?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Did he actually play or was he just there? Because I know he was. I know they were all at the Fan Fest. I had a friend of mine that I saw there that he was telling me that they were there.
Yeah, he played.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I saw at least one hit. It was he does not have a good swing. Like, he should stick to his hot dogs for sure. But no, so yeah, people do love that stuff. But that's cool, man. I'm excited to hopefully get a chance to maybe less than a 12-hour drive somewhere from here. I'll get to go to another one. But
I looked it up. Next year is Washington, so that's quite a trip for me.
Yeah, that's right
out. Actually. So, but Ron might be able to go again, right? That's not too far away.
Well, let's see. Atlanta's about 8 hours from here, 7 hours. So I'd say, if I had to guess, I'd say D.C. would probably be, what, like 11 or 12?
Probably, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll come to Atlanta, because Atlanta's not all that bad, and hopefully it'll come to Atlanta because they got the new park pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be there before too long. But to get into some more, I guess, pressing fantasy stuff, you know, we're kind of going to mix things up a little bit this week. It's the All-Star break. I've got the F word on TV instead of baseball, so Gordon Ramsay is presumably just shouting obscenities, but it's on mute. So, but... So, yeah, a little bit of a lull in the action. And so I thought we'd take this week and, you know, rather than reflect on the 2017 MVPs that we've had and just, you know, reflect on that, we would instead look forward and perhaps give the people some second half MVPs that we can predict. And We're also going to get to a little bit later. We're going to nitpick the new Dynasty Guru Top 500 list because we like to do a Dynasty slant in this podcast as well. And mid-season, I think it's a very good time, especially with a lull in the games, to dive into the player evaluations and see the biggest risers and fallers and, you know, pop-up prospects and all that fun stuff. So we're going to dig into that after the break. But first, we're going to talk about our second half MVPs. And these don't necessarily, at least this is how I approached it. Like, these aren't really like guys that are 20% owned who are going to be, you know, we're going to light the world on fire and be the best pickups of the year. I just sort of picked, I've got a list of seven guys that basically, I think you can either buy under their value or just will be awesome. And perhaps if you wish to target them, because these guys are all fairly heavily owned. But I just think that they can be real difference makers for you in the second half. And so I guess, Ben, I guess we can start with you as far as your list. And maybe we'll each give one and just kind of keep going around around the table, around the horn, as they say.
Sure, yeah. And my guys as well are pretty well owned. They're just a couple of names that I think were kind of underperforming that can certainly turn it on in the second half. So I'll start off with what's probably an easy one, but I think a lot of people have become disenchanted with him, and that's Manny Machado. He's coming out with a 230, 296, 445 line so far. However, the power has been there. He's got 18 home runs. He's got, I don't have the steals number in front of me, but it's a lot more than the zero he put up last year. So he's actually getting you some steals and help in that category. Big thing for me is he's got a 239 BABIP so far this year, and that's far below his career level. But he also has a 40% hard contact rate and a 43% fly ball rate. If you're hitting the ball in the air that much and hitting it that hard, you're going to hit home runs. With a BABIP that's arguably 60 points below where it should be, if you add 60 points to all of his slash numbers, you've got a pretty good player. So I really think he's going to bounce back in a big way. Maybe you can't quite get him for a cheap price because he's very young, but I think if you've got an owner that's kind of upset with him, maybe you can buy him with a couple of hot players. Eric Thames isn't a good example because he sucked lately, but when Eric Thames was really good, maybe you could move a guy like that for him, something that's performing far and above better than what you would expect, but throw a couple other pieces in and see what you can get.
So what about like a Cody Bellinger?
Cody Bellinger would be good, and I think that's actually a really good comp. I would move Bellinger for Machado in a heartbeat. If I had Machado, even if I put myself in the spot of thinking that he's not as good as he was, I would still want a little more. So if you could do a Bellinger and, I don't know, a reliever, like maybe a third-tier closer or something, you might be able to get that done. But I would definitely move Bellinger for him.
Yeah, I think I would offer that up one for one, too. I bet there's more people think would take that.
True.
Just because of where they've, you know, I mean, Bellinger is the hot one right now, him and Judge, obviously. But so, yeah, I think his value is just through the roof right now. So you could get a mint for him. Ron, who you got?
Well, I went Captain Obvious on the first one. Mike Trout, you know, he's the best in the game. He's coming back with a vengeance. And I think that,
who?
You know, he's apparently like this outfielder. I think they describe him as toolsy, if you will.
Doesn't have a neck. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, yeah. He's lacking.
He's got a tree.
A trunk. But yeah, I mean, you know, it sounds simple, but at the same time, I have him in a league that I need him to come back, and I need to make a run now if I'm going to do anything in this league. So I think it's one of those things that, you know, Mike Trout is all out all the time anyway, but I think that it's one of these things where I think this is the kind of the first time he's missed significant time in his career. And so I think he's going to be chomping at the bit to get back and put the team back on his back. So, you know, not that you don't know that you're going to get production from Mike Trout, but I think it's going to be, you know, on another level. I think he's going to do it all, you know, even more so than he normally does. But, you know, it's something when you can stash away, you know, the number one player in the game, and right about the All-Star break, right about the time that you really need to figure out what your team's going to be doing, you get this guy back. So it's a bonus, especially if you've been able to stay afloat as far as, you know, the team that you have that he's on. Now, the team that I have, I've been dropping a little bit, so I really need him, and I got Bumgarner coming back, and they're kind of my last hope on getting into the money. But Trout's the guy I got first, you know, like I said, Captain Obvious pick, but, you know, he's gonna be, you know, kind of a bonus player. And plus, too, I've been getting – it's funny because I've been getting offers for him in the last week or so. Well, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to hang on to the guy the whole time, And then, I've had him on my bench. I can't use him for 6 weeks or whatever. But yeah, I'll trade you for the garbage offer that you just sent me. So.
Oh, that's what I was gonna say. Is like, I think the best time to have done that was a few weeks ago, because now that he's scheduled to come back on Friday. So I think if somebody has been hanging on to him this long, it's like, I'm definitely not giving him up at this point. It's Mike freaking Trout. Yeah.
What's scary is that, you know, the beginning part of this year before he got hurt, he showed that last year and the year before were not his ceiling. Like, we still, who knows how good he can be, because he was doing 25. Everything he did and running at the beginning of this season. So, I mean, this is, to me, hands down the best player in baseball, and that's not debatable. I love Bryce Harper. I love Carlos Correa. I love these guys. But, I mean, Trout's the guy.
And I think the injury just puts an added chip on his shoulder, too. Mm-hmm. That he needs to prove that he is the one that carries that team. I mean, I will say, and Van, you know this as a fan, I think they've done a pretty nice job of kind of staying afloat. I mean, they haven't went on a run or anything, but with him being out, they've done a pretty nice job of kind of trying to, you know, stay in it a little bit.
Cameron Maben has been unbelievably good for that team. Yeah. If he can stay healthy and keep doing what he's doing, having Trout in there as well, Andrelton Simmons is playing really well and always is good defensively. That's a team that could be sneaky good. If they wander their way into the playoffs, I mean, they still don't have the pitching, but if they make a move, maybe get another top-tier starter or even a decent starter, you never know. I mean, they could go somewhere this year, which excites me because I didn't expect it.
Yeah, my guy, this is going to be probably the highest-ranked guy that I throw out there. But it's a guy who I feel like the perception is still lower than it should be on him, and that's JD Martinez, who missed the first chunk of the season with an injury, and that is his knock. Like, he tends to miss time with injury, but I was looking at the expected weighted on base leaderboards over at Baseball Savant, and he is number 7 right now. Let me give you his actual weighted on base right now is 405. His expected weighted on base is 420, which is the seventh highest. Yeah, it's the seventh highest mark in baseball. We're talking up with the elite. The Mike Trout is 448, so that's still quite a bit higher. But like, for what he is, I mean, JD Martinez just has been destroying baseballs since he got back, and he can be just a huge difference maker. I think he's one of the best pure hitters in baseball right now. So you're not just getting, you know, empty power out of him. He's hitting for average and walking a lot too. He's got a 381 on base right now. And, the expected WOBA equation likes him to even get better over the second half. So if I'd be kicking the tires on him for sure, especially if you need power and an on base in a league, which is exactly what I needed in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League when I traded for him a few weeks ago.
There you go. Yeah. And I, in the past, was kind of hesitant to do a whole lot with JD Martinez. The walk rate was a little concerning for me. It was decent, but I mean, it's only going up. He's at 12.1 now. I'm all in. I think he's an elite hitter. I mean, he's a little older. What is he, 29? Well, he's not that old, but maybe he's not a 25-year-old Mike Trout level star, but he's hitting 299, 381, 610. The guy's mashing the baseball, and the Tigers need him. And if you're in a spot where you could use him in the fantasy league, which is most people, that's definitely a guy to target.
Yeah, and I agree with what you said too. I mean, he's somebody that's putting up nice stats, and he's, as long as he's healthy, I mean, we know what you're going to get for him, you know, from him. And I think he's a guy that nobody's really, really talking about. He's kind of hidden away, I guess. And I got a couple other Tigers on my list too, so it's going to be a pretty full list of Detroit Tigers. But yeah, I agree all around.
And next up on my list, this, you thought I had the most highest ranked name when I said Manny Machado, but that is not correct, because my next player is Chris Bryant of the Chicago Cubs.
Ah.
And the reason I say that is I feel like people aren't giving him the love that they should be, because he's not up there with the leaders as far as home runs. I mean, he's hit 18, so it's not that he's not hitting for power. It's just not quite what a lot of people would have expected for him. I thought he'd be a 40 home run guy this year, and he's probably not going to reach that level with half the season already gone. But guess what? He's still really good. He's hitting 269, 399, 529, and that's with a 301 BABIP. So if he has a little bit of fortune in that regard for the second half, you can see the average go up. His contact percents splits are at 15.2 light contact, soft contact, 53.1 medium, and 31% hard contact. I think the hard can actually go up from there. But regardless, when your light soft contact is only 15%, that's amazing. One thing we have seen from Bryant this year is a pull percentage has gone down a bit. It's 239.3% of the time from 45%. So maybe he's just trying to spray the ball a little bit to other fields. So just be a little bit of a different hitter. I don't think he needs to be that. I think he needs to be the pull hitter that he is and just crush baseballs.
Yeah, he's looked out of sorts on defense too, and just kind of in general, he's dealt with a rolled ankle and whatnot. So, yeah, I he's too good to to be this bad, but like you get a 400 on base, you know, it's really not that bad. But
yeah, he's an elite level talent. So I mean, he's performing like a low elite level talent, but he's a high elite level guy. So there's still room to grow from this line.
Yeah, especially in redraft leagues, he now is a guy that you can have. That you can get
for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ron.
All right. So next one I have is when I went through this list, I looked at the guys that I have kind of stashed away on a few teams of mine, and I took over an ESPN team. I don't know, about a month ago, and a guy that was on there that I wasn't sure about was Travis Shaw, and I'm glad that he's on that team because I think that he's a guy that second half, he ended the first half really well. Second half, he's going to be legitimate. Right now, he's hitting .299. He's on pace for 34 homers and 116 RBIs. Now, I don't know if he's going to keep that pace up, but pretty impressive what he's doing and pretty impressive overall what Milwaukee's doing. That lineup's pretty solid around him. And I alluded to earlier when I was referencing the Futures game when I was talking about Mauricio Dubon, you figure they gave up Shaw and Dubon for a mid reliever in Tyler Thornburg. So they got him essentially for nothing, and he's the heart of their lineup. I mean, you look at the metrics across the board, weighted runs created plus 138. We know the league average is 100, so he's well over that, 390 wOBA. I like the fact, too, that he is hitting the baseball to hard contact rate of about 37.6%. So you got to like all that in Miller Park, but I think he's legit. Middle of the order power guy. You know, I kind of had him on my bench when I first took that team over, and I've dropped a couple of first basemen because he's the guy that I have there, and he's eligible at first and third in a lot of leagues too. But he this whole list of guys that I put together, I think that they're guys that people know about, but you don't hear a ton about him, and I don't hear a lot of people talking about Travis Shaw. But on that team, I couldn't be happier to have him. But I think he's in for a big second half, especially based on the way he ended up the first half and the way that team's playing.
Yeah, I, you know, kind of had the same thought about Travis Shaw, and I wrote a Holder Fold article with him involved a little while back. And the beauty of that was once I started to delve into the numbers, I realized just how good he's been. Now, I guess my concern would be that, you know, he's never really put together full seasons. Mm-hmm. But if he can and if he continues to do so, I mean, he's going to have a really undervalued season. He's been that good.
Yeah, and he played. You know, I was looking at you mentioned that the full season that as he put one together ever, and I looked at his stats from last year, and you know when you look at what he did last year, he only hit .242. He did play in 145 games, but he only hit 16 homers, only hit 63 RBIs. So he definitely wasn't somebody coming into this season that I was targeting anywhere. So you can kind of see, you know, I guess essentially when you look at what that trade was based upon, you know, the Brewers definitely did not think they were getting the numbers in the production that they're getting this year. So that's kind of a bonus for them as well. But yeah, when you look at all the metrics really, really look awesome overall.
Very good. My next guy is going to be Lucas Duda. And he's a guy who sort of has had his place kind of like Travis Shaw in the past, like guy that just can't hit lefties and, you know, more of a corner infield type, but quick without looking, just take a stab on Yahoo. How highly owned do you think Lucas Duda is?
Own percentage? It's not enough, but I'll say 40%.
I'll say 30.
Nine?
Ah. Are you kidding me?
9% owned. He's got 14 homers, a .351 on base. He is 9% owned on Yahoo. I don't know what it's going to take for this guy to get some friggin' respect. But you need to own him if you're – I mean, granted that power and on-base is sort of the easy thing to find these days, so maybe that's got a little bit to do with that. But still, like this guy, when he's healthy, he just keeps hitting, man. He's walking 14% of the time. His heart contact rate is up to 45% this year, career high. And it's no coincidence he's pulling the ball for a ton of power. That's what he does. He's going to get you taters. He's not going to have a great batting average, but he's going to walk just a ton of the time. I think he can have, as long as he's healthy, he can have a huge second half. He's on this expected WOBA leaderboard as well. He's number 36 overall, right behind Encarnacion, Daniel Murphy, in front of Giancarlo Stanton and Miguel Sano. You might have heard of those guys before. So for the love of God, go pick up Lucas Duda.
And you guys are both parents, so perhaps you know what I'm talking about. Have you seen or heard of the children's program Boobah?
No.
No? Nate?
I mean, I've squeezed a few Boobahs, but...
I urge you to check it out, because it's one of the most terrifying things you've ever seen. It's meant for, like, toddlers. So it's just these weird little costumed people bouncing around making noise and being really colorful. But every time I think of Lucas Duda, that's all I can think of is Boobah. So check that out.
How does it compare to Teletubbies in, as far as weirdness?
Very, very similar. I would say Boobah's actually creepier.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So next up on my list, I have one of my personal favorites, and that is, of course, Christian Yelich of the Miami Marlins. So far this season, he's hitting .280, .359, .406. And the reason he's on this list is because of that last number. He's only hit 8 home runs, power's down a little bit, the double output as well. He has stolen 8 bases, and he only stole 9 all of last year. But every other number is virtually in line with his career. The line drive rate's a little bit down, and the ground ball rate's a little bit up. I think if that course corrects and goes back to more traditional career stats, you're going to get a few more doubles out of him. The home run fly ball rate is below his career level by 2-3%. So I do think he's got a little more room for power. It was shocking to a lot of people that he hit 20 plus home runs last year, but I still think he can do it. He's got that good of a swing. He's going to bat third in that lineup. I really, really like him. And remember, he's a kid. I think he's only 24, 25 years old. So he's still got, I think, another level to go. And now that we're seeing him run a little more than he did last year, which is the one thing that kind of disappeared, there's definitely some value to be had. He's a traditional on-base guy, and he walks a lot, so he's going to help you out in that regard. And that .280 average, I think, has room to improve as well. He's 25 now, so he's a little older than I thought, but he's still young. So I still really, really like Christian Yelich.
Yeah, 8-for-8 in steals, too. You got to like that. So maybe he even starts to run a little bit more in the second half.
Fun kid.
Be interesting to see if there's any traction behind what we were talking about a couple weeks ago with him possibly getting dealt somewhere.
Boy, if he did, we talk about Chicago? Was that right?
Yeah.
Oh man,
yeah,
that's really the only
trade rumor I've seen around him. So
I think that would take a hell of a haul because he's on a really friendly deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Next guy on my list. Once again, somebody that I kind of feel is not getting the love that they should be, and he's helping you in a couple categories that are a little bit underrated as well as Ender Inciarte. Hitting .302, he swiped 11 bags. He does have 7 homers, and I mean, you're not getting Ender Inciarte for the power aspect. You want him to steal bases. You want him to score runs. He's sitting at the top of that lineup. That Atlanta lineup has been pretty good so far. He's actually third in the league with 112 hits, and so he's getting on base, at a pretty good clip. I like the fact he's only striking out at 14.4% when you look across the board there. The OBP is at .350. You like that as well. And he's got some guys behind him, especially with them getting Freddie Freeman back, Matt Adams, Matt Kemp. He's got some guys that are going to bring him home as well. And so he's a guy that, especially in daily, if I can get a hold of him as far as when he's facing off against a righty, he's a guy, no matter what I'm doing on my daily lineup, I got to fit him in there because he's always affordable. And he's got solid numbers, and he's always seems to have a lower ownership percentage in daily than I would think. Now, I'm not sure what it is as far as yearly formats, but overall, I think that, you know, if you understand what you're getting with him, if you know you're going to get the runs and get the steals in the average, and even some leagues count hits, he's a guy that I don't know what it's going to take to get him, but I look for him to just continue what he's doing. I mean, with what he's got up there now, it wouldn't be unheard of that he steals 25 bases. He hits 15 home runs, scores 90 runs, you know, and keeps that .300 average up. So I like him across the board as far as if you were able to get him in an outfield or at an outfield spot on your team.
Yeah, it's I think the only other person that's pumping him up is Nate Miller. So if you're not following him, then you really haven't heard anything about NCRT this year. It feels like
you
got
to give credit to Nate too, because Nate's been pumping him up since like March or April. So,
and a bonus is that whenever you're typing in Ender, it autocorrects to Wonder.
That's true. Yes, and you know I have him in the Dynasty Baseball League. I've had to fend off quite a few trade offers that. I think people are trying to assume that you don't value him. So I've gotten some pretty terrible trade offers for him, but I have no reason to move him because he's young and I still think he might even have another level. So I think he's, I think 11 for 16 for steals this year. I think that could improve with a little bit more just, playing a little more. So I think there's another level for him. He's a good player to watch.
Indeed. My next guy is going to be Jay Bruce.
Of course it is.
Yeah, you love Jay Bruce. You know it. deep down in your heart of hearts. He's awesome, man. He's gone full pull heavy fly ball this year, and he's just kicking ass because of it. Yeah, he's always been a pull heavy guy. He's 44%. That's right in line with what he's done, but 43% hard contact rate this year. And he's just pumping along. He's hitting more fly balls than ever before, 48.8% fly ball rate, and that's how he's getting it done, and I don't see why he would stop now. I've liked him for years. I feel like everybody else on Earth hates him for some reason. You got to love the guy. There's like this great gif of him drunkenly celebrating when they're interviewing. Have you guys seen that when they're doing interviews after the Mets won in the playoffs?
Isn't he wearing some weird costume or like a crown or something?
I think he just has a hat on. But
okay,
like,
maybe that's something else I saw.
No, I like the idea that Ron refers to a hat as a weird costume.
I want to say it was like a. Now I got to find it. I want to say it was like a toga or something, and there was a hat involved. I don't know.
Well, I approve of all of that if it's true.
Like, I'll have to send it to you guys. There's an interview going on in the foreground, and then in the background, he just sort of wanders up in between the interviewer and the interviewee, and he just kind of looks in either direction, unsure of what the hell is going on exactly, and then just kind of walks off. It's terrific.
Nice.
Yeah, but his weighted on base right now is 364, expected WOBA 365. So they expect him to keep this pace up, and so do I. And he might even get moved to some friendlier digs and hit some extra dingers on top of that, because you know the Mets home park isn't the greatest place to hit, and their lineup isn't the best either. So I think if he gets dealt, it's only gonna boost his value up. So I'm buying me some Jay Bruce.
Yeah, he's back to that thing where he did this for years, where he was just a 260 hitter with 30-plus homers, and he's back to that again. I think I traded him to you in the Dynasty League last year, and that looks like a mistake at this point. I was kind of concerned about him just because of his shape, and that's how he would age poorly. But I don't know. Over the last 2 years, he's really turned it back on and become a really valuable hitter. And don't forget, this was a first-round pick. Like, this guy, I think it was 12th overall or something like that. So he has a pedigree. He's just kind of dumpy-looking. So good player, though. Very good player. Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, he was a top prospect for a long time in the Red. You know, he's one of those guys, like, we talk about now with, like, Gleyber Torres and Amed Rosario. I remember waiting for him to finally come up. I found that picture, by the way, and he's wearing some sort of crown and, like, a Mets-colored robe in the locker room after the game. So I didn't dream that it actually exists.
Okay. I like the idea that he just has that on him at all times. Yeah. Like, it's just in his locker just in case.
He should wear in the game. Plus, I like the fact too that I was able to get him in my auction keeper for $6. So,
oh, nice. That's a good deal.
Yeah.
All right. Next up for you guys, I have another third baseman on my list, and that is Seattle Mariners third baseman, Kyle Seager. He's hitting 248, yes. 320, 404. He's got 10 home runs, which is a little below his career pace, but still some home runs. You've got another low BABIP guy here. He's at 271 this season. He's got a 290 career mark. So that's just a little below, but 20 points can make all the difference. A 270 hitter versus a 250 hitter, for whatever reason, in my mind, is a huge jump. So I think that average could go back up. His contact levels are fine. His soft contact's down a little bit with the medium contact up. So that's a good sign. Home run to fly ball is about 4 to 5% below his career levels. And he's only hitting right-handers at 263 mark this year. Being a left-handed hitter, usually that's much higher, 280, 290. I think there's just some course correction due here. He's not that old. And he's been one of the most steady performers at third base for the last several years. And I think he gets right back to it. I could see the power output going up and him reaching, I don't know, 25 home runs this year, which seems about right in line with what I would predict anyway. And he's often a slow starter as it is. So a guy that isn't flashy, but maybe you can find the owner and give him a flashy, shiny piece and see if you can get him, because I really think he's going to be steady and give us a good last half of the season.
Love that call. Yeah, I own him in the BGFS Dynasty Classic. And I've been like, it caught me off guard, actually, how few home runs he'd hit when I had, given it a couple weeks and looked up his numbers. And yeah, there's nothing out of line in his batted ball statistics at all. He's just, his home run fly ball is just like cut in half from what it should be. And I've thought to myself many times that, boy, he would be a nice buy low. And you have confirmed it. So now I'm going to go buy low everywhere.
And he did this a few years ago. I think it was 2 years ago I drafted him. And a third of the way through the season, I remember thinking, man, what a bust. Well, I'll stick him on my bench and play another guy for a bit and see what happens. And then he suddenly turned it on and did what he always does. So I think this is just a case of that. Sometimes guys do that. They just have weird splits and they struggle for half a season or a third of a season and then really turn it on and give you their numbers.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think I wrote about a couple weeks ago on Fantastics, and looking across the board at his numbers too, they were sneaky good. You know, a lot. I think that's going to be the phrase that gets used a lot on this list, but it was way more impressive than what I thought that he was putting up. You know, that and compare that with, you know, Cruz and Cano in that lineup. They got some boppers in the middle of that lineup too. All right, so next guy I got is, you know, once again, another guy that I think is a little bit not getting the love that he deserves, and that's Lance McCullers. You got to remember, he's only 23 years old. K per nine is over 10 right now. He cut the walks in half from last year. His ERA last year, 3.22, pretty impressive. But when you look at the walks per nine, he was averaging 5 walks per 9 innings, which is a lot. But the homers were less than a homer per game. So and strand rate was high. So he was able to, I guess, pitch out of jams last year. But when you look at the K numbers this year, what he's putting up is insane as far as the K per 9. Like I said before, he's got 106 Ks in 91 innings. Teams are hitting .224 against him. And he's always going to help you in that win column. Since, you know, he's 7-2 right now, they have that offense behind him in Houston that's able to score runs in bunches. So he's another guy that I'm going to try. It's probably going to cost me a little bit, but I got a couple leagues where I need some pitching. He's a target that I have before the trade deadline. And you know he's going to strike guys out, but if you can get a hold of him in Dynasty, go get him now if you're able to. And you know, he's going to be worth the price tag because, like I said, he's only 23 and he's showing flashes of what he's able to do. And kind of like Vance said with Ender Inciarte, I don't think this is the ceiling. I think the ceiling's even higher than what he's putting up. So he's a guy I'm going to try to get everywhere I can.
It's funny you should say that, Ron, because he was just traded today in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League.
Was
he? Was he traded for? Let's see. There's the team who is nipping at my heels for first place. Of course, you know, me leading the pack like usual. But the second place team, Master Exploder, he traded Yadier. Yeah, you said. Oh no, that's
not at all. Hell?
No, I have no freaking clue who the hell that guy is. Actually,
Yordan Alvarez.
Yordan, that must be a prospect with Houston. Sorry, I'm not too familiar with him. But Craig Kimbrell was the main piece, along with Trey Mancini and Tom Murphy, for McCullers, Daz Cameron, and Forrest Wall.
I'd definitely rather have the McCullers side of this trade a lot.
Absolutely.
I think Mancini was probably overvalued in this trade a bit. And we talked about him a few weeks ago and that there's some value to be had here, but it's not that much value.
Yeah, and then, I mean, throwing in Daz Cameron and Forrest Wall, like Forrest Wall, his Dynasty stock has sort of ticked back up, but Cameron might not ever be an impact guy, is right. The way it's sort of looking at this point. So, yeah, I think it's a great time to sell high on Mancini before I still think he gets exposed with a little bit more at-bats. I think he's just got, I guess I could look it up, but I'm pretty sure he's just got a huge home run per fly ball and too many strikeouts.
You know, I'm on the Dynasty Baseball League transaction page here. There's a pending trade on here that for whatever reason hasn't been accepted yet. Do you know about that, Nate?
Was that, I might, was that, hold on, let me look at this here.
It is what you're thinking.
Oh, yeah, Chris. Well, I give up Chris Bryant, and you give up Jose Leclerc.
The Texas croissant. Yeah, he's got a nickname. That's how good he is. So you might consider that one again, for sure.
I'm going to go ahead and consider that right now. You'll have the answer momentarily. Who are we on? Is it me?
You.
I think so.
Okay, Nick Castellanos. I think it was only a matter of time before one of us came upon him. This is like the unluckiest dude of all time, unlucky dudes. As I should pull up his page here. Let's see. He's again, let me find his expected on bases. Castellanos, 46. So 363 expected weighted on base right now. I was totally screwing around. Nicholas Castellanos.
248, 313, 433 is his current line, just so the listeners know.
Okay, yeah, 318 WOBA. It's so weird that it's annoying that he changed his name. So some places now he's Nick still, and some places he's friggin' Nicholas. So you have to type his damn name in twice for it to show up. Anyway, yeah, 248 line, like you said, 318 WOBA. Expected WOBA, 363. 310 BABIP, you wouldn't think is that low, but the way he's stinging the ball, it actually is. Near 50% hard contact rate. This guy should be hitting a lot more home runs than he is. And I'm telling you, keep the faith with him if you've got him. It's tough. Mixed 10-team leagues, maybe you wouldn't fret too much about losing him, but I really think he's going to be a lot better over the second half, and he makes for a good buy low in most leagues.
Yeah, and he's 25 as well, so he's young. You can't hit the ball that hard and not succeed for an extended period of time. I mean, if it happens for a half season, okay, I get it. There's weird stuff that can go down, but I fully expect him to top his home run total of 18 this season. He's on pace to hit 18, but I could definitely see 25 if he keeps hitting the ball as hard as he is.
Yeah, he should be on pace for 30 with the 275 average.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But he's been so screwed in the first half that his end of season numbers aren't going to look good.
Next up for you, I have another third base. Well, no, not anymore. Hang on, he plays everywhere. They're going to talk about moving him back to second base, and that is Matt Carpenter of the St. Louis Cardinals. Nate, you and I were really high on him in the preseason, and I still
Target am. Supreme.
Yep, he's hitting 237, 378, 449. So right off the bat, he's got a 17.5 walk rate, which is insane. I don't expect it to be that high because that's just absurd. But he's still going to have a 15% walk rate, which means he's going to get on base a lot. He only has 14 homers, a 256 BABIP, so that could explain quite a bit of batting average right there. Hard contacts at 45.1%. I kind of looked at his profile of how people are pitching him. Really, the only difference this year is that he's seeing more changeups. So reading that, and I don't know if this is a fact, that makes me think he's probably seen a few more left-handers than he usually does. So maybe that'll kind of course correct over the rest of the season. And he's, again, another guy who's hitting the ball hard and I still think has another level, certainly compared to this. Even if the home runs aren't there, this is a guy who hit like 60, 70 doubles or something absurd like that in the season. So he hits the ball hard. He's eligible at a lot of positions, and I really, really like him again still for the second half of the season. So if you've got him and you're disappointed in what we said earlier in the year, don't be, because at the end of the season, we're going to see some good stuff out of Matt Carpenter.
Yeah, I love the fact that he's eligible so many places too, because that helps you in a lot of leagues. I got yet another pitcher and yet another Detroit Tiger. We're almost going to have the whole Tigers team on here. I think we're expecting big things from them. I went with Michael Fulmer. And once again, a guy that I think can really help you as far as certain categories and not really talked about as far as the season he's having. 3.19 ERA. He's got 9 wins already. So I think, you know, we're all kind of expecting, because I have yet another Tiger on the offensive side that I'm going to talk about here on this list as well. We're expecting that offense to take a little bit of an uptick. So it's possible he could get you 20 wins. You know, he's not going to be a guy you're going to get a lot of strikeouts out of. His K per nine is actually down this year, almost a full strikeout to 6.5. But, you know, you got to like the strand rate. I wish it was a little bit higher, but 71% is not bad. The ground ball rate's 49%. Home run to fly ball rate's only 6.6, so that's pretty solid. And overall, there's just a lot to like as far as him helping out your ratios. It just the only place he's really not going to help you out is K's. But like I said, you know, 20 wins is kind of a rarity. nowadays, and he's already got 9 in 17 starts. So as long as he stays healthy, made 26 starts last year, and the numbers look very similar. They're down a little bit in a couple of places. Like I said, I'd like to see a few more strikeouts out of him, because in AAA, before he got called up last year, he was averaging about 11.7 per game, and that's kind of his high for his minor league career. But overall, I like what Michael Fulmer's doing, and I just don't think that he's getting the love across the board. And he's another guy that I'm going to try to pair with Lance McCullers and try to go out and get in a couple leagues before the deadline happens.
You know, I really think with Fulmer here that the lower strikeout totals might help you as a fantasy player, because he's not going to be valued as higher as the other guys.
Right.
I would compare it to maybe, you know, 5 years ago in Adam Wainwright. Like, he was a guy that at best would strike out a batter an inning. Fulmer's obviously not that high. I think it's better than the 6.5 that he's doing right now. But he's got a guy that's really going to help your ERA. It's going to help your whip. Maybe he doesn't strike out as many guys, but he still has a ton of value. So I think that helps you as an owner, and maybe you could kind of push that if you're trying to buy him. Go out there and say, hey, this is a guy who's not striking out as many. You know, maybe he's a number four starter. Well, actually, you value him as a number two, but if you can convince someone he's a number four, then great, good for you.
Well, and even when I was putting this list together, you know, I was looking at different guys that strikeouts is one of the first things I'll look at if I'm adding somebody on a free agent list or I'm looking to make trades. But he's somebody that, as I was compiling this list, that I was looking at strikeouts, and then I was just looking at all the pitchers there, and I'm like, start looking at his stats, and they're surprisingly good, and it's pretty quiet. I mean, he's kind of a well-kept secret, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a breakout last year, you know, thanks to the development of that changeup. And I, ever since he did that, like, I'm just all in on him. So, yeah, especially in Dynasty Leagues, which we're going to talk about in a little bit here, I'm all in on him for sure. So we're running a little bit long here, so I think I'm just going to give the rest of my guys all right in a row here, and then you guys can fall in turn. So I'm going to give an honorable mention here to Tommy Pham real quick. I pumped him up enough on the show, I think, in the past couple of weeks. So I'll just kind of gloss over him. But, yeah, expected on base of 354, weighted on base blah, of 354. He's going to steal you some bags, too, and occasionally hit second in that lineup. So Tommy Pham. Aaron Nola is another guy who I've pumped up a little bit from time to time on this show. We did some rest of season projections. Well, not we, but I believe it's just Anthony Perry. He plugged some numbers into a software, and we got some rest of season projections from him. And so Aaron Nola right now, the rest of season projection, according to that software, he's the 15th starting pitcher over the course of the second half. His expected ERA, 3.47, right about in line at 3.59, where he's at right now. Expected WHIP of 1.17. He's right at 1.18 currently. So if you just do that while striking out pretty much a batter an inning over the second half, there you go. He's the 15th most valuable starting pitcher. And as long as he can stay healthy, I definitely feel confident he can do that. And then the last guy I'm going to throw out there is Johnny Cueto, who's been just sort of a shell of himself in the first half. But the rest of the season, he's projected to be the 19th most valuable starting pitcher, according to the Fantastic calculations. Expected ERA of 3.46. His current ERA is 4.51. And a 1.19 WHIP for the rest of the season. He's currently sitting at 1.37. So they think that he's going to be a lot better, and I do too. There's, I'm not going to get too into the numbers, but basically everything looks like he should be striking out more guys and walking fewer, which hasn't been the case so far. So I agree with the sunny projections on Johnny Cueto.
There you go. I just have one more player for you, and I have him on this list just to spite you, Nate. And that is, of course, yeah, Brandon Belt of the San Francisco Giants.
I don't hate Brandon Belt.
You hate Brandon Belt.
He's just not very good.
He's really good. He's hitting 243, 349, 470. He's got 16 homers, 13.9 walk percent, 283 BABIP. His hard contact's in line with his career, and actually slightly higher. It's 38.3. He's pulling the ball a bit more, and he could probably stand to hit the ball to all fields to improve his batting average. But this is a lot of poor luck. I mean, this is a guy who's been hitting the ball really well. He walks a lot. I think he's still criminally undervalued. And if he were in any other stadium, well, almost any other stadium, man, what could be with this kid? But he's really good, and I still love Brandon Belt, and I think there's another level for him in the second half too. I think the average ticks up quite a bit.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of guys left real quick. I said I have another Tiger on there. Miguel Cabrera, he's too good to be posting the numbers that he's posting now. I don't think he's done yet. I think he's going to improve on the numbers that are down. 307 BABIP, 339 WOBA, way down from career numbers. I think he could have a pretty decent second half if he can stay healthy. And the last guy that I had is a guy that I picked up in that same auction keeper that I got Jay Bruce for $6. And a funny story behind it was I was trying to chase some saves, and I thought I'd be slick, you know, a while ago, and I made a speculative ad of Joe Nathan for nothing. And I actually had somebody in that league trade me Troy Tulowitzki for Joe Nathan. And so I said, yeah, well, both equally gross. And I ended up.
No, I mean, I'd definitely rather have Tulowitzki than Joe Nathan. Gross.
But I hopped on that, and then I ended up dropping Tulowitzki for Didi Gregorius because I made another trade and I needed a shortstop because Tulo was on the DL, and I added Gregorius for $1, and he's got 10 homers. He's on pace for 19 homers, 72 RBI, 291 average, and so I'll take that all day long in a deep league where I got him for $1. So he's a guy too that I think is a sneaky small piece that, you know, you might look at if he needs some middle infield help. He's playing well. He's like the 12th ranked shortstop. He's only about 65% owned, which really isn't that much as far as what he's giving you. So he's my last guy that I had up there is old Didi.
Old Didi. Won a bet on him 1 year. I took the under on 9.5 home runs back when Joe was a co-host.
So there he had 9?
He had 9. I was really sweating it there towards the end. And look at him now. He's a different player.
So I got 10.
Yeah, I would have already lost. Search. Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with some dynasty valuations.
Do you want every word of baseball analysis from Big Guy Fantasy Sports sent directly to your inbox each and every day? In that case, head on over to BigGuyFantasySports.com, find the box that says BGFS Daily Fantasy Blast, type in your name and email address, then click subscribe. It's that simple. Don't fall behind your competition on waiver wire trends, prospect scouting reports, streaming options, or even DFS picks to click. Subscribe to the BigGuyFantasySports.com newsletter today.
You're listening to the BGFS Network, where we keep fantasy real.
Welcome back to the nastiest cast that I know. During the break, we were commenting on Van's loud keyboard. You got to turn the volume down on that sucker, Van.
Just a bit.
He's upset about those Dynasty Guru rankings. That's what it is.
So upset. I'm just mashing my palms into the keyboard. Yeah. That's what I do when I get angry.
You don't have to take it out on the letters, Van.
I'm a real poop poster.
Okay, so what we're going to do here, and this is going to be a shorter conversation than it could have been, but nobody wants to listen to a five-hour podcast because we could talk about this all day. And we're sort of doing a disservice, I guess, because we've had guys like Brett Sayre and Nick Duran on the show before who, you know, put rankings into this. It might be all Brett Sayre, I guess, to be perfectly honest. I'm not exactly sure who comes up with this 500, if it's a compilation or not. But regardless, we're not actually talking to them. We're just talking about their rankings in this particular occasion. Of course, you can go to the dynastyguru.com and check out the top 500 list yourself. Like they say, you know, it's a helpful tool as far as making trades and trying to convince somebody who maybe thinks somebody sucks that look at this expert. He thinks that Xander Bogaerts is number 13 overall. You know, he's not worthless, even though he's having a crappy year, that kind of thing. So what we're going to do is, well, we've all picked a bunch of stuff that we agree with, maybe disagree with, stuff that stands out to us. But we're going to start off with something that we typically do every season right around midseason on this show for the past couple of years, and that is to take a look at the first round in Dynasty Leagues, see how things have changed. And, you know, typically in the past we've sort of made up our own list, but let's just banter a bit about this TDG top 15 right now. And so number one, no surprise, Mike Trout, even though he's hit DL for a lengthy period for the first time in his career, it's not enough to knock him off of the number one ranking. But number two, we have Bryce Harper. Number three is Mookie Betts. Number four is Carlos Correa. Number five, Chris Bryant. Number six, Nolan Arenado. Seven is Goldschmidt. Eight is Trey Turner. Manny Machado at 9. Altuve at 10. Corey Seager at 11. Clayton Kershaw at 12. Xander, as I said, at 13. Freddie Freeman at 14. And Miguel Sano at 15. So, Van, what stands out to you here?
Couple of important ones for me, and this is going to be the most unpopular opinion because I know I get it, but Trey Turner at 8 is too high for me, And I know and I understand that steals are a little harder to come by. And guess what? He's one of, if not, well, he's one of the best runners because Billy Hamilton's still in there. But I'm wary of guys who don't walk. And you hear me say this all the time. And the big reason for that is when they slump, like as in when they don't hit the ball as well and they don't get on base by hitting the ball, then they really, really struggle. Whereas if you've got a guy who walks at a really high rate, even when he struggles, he's still going to get on base and score you some runs. So I'm a little wary of Trey Turner. It's just high for me. That's kind of nitpicking because, I don't know, maybe at 15 would be a really good spot for him, in my opinion. So that's kind of nitpicking. Obviously, you touched on Xander Bogaerts. That's absurd having him at 13. And I like Xander Bogaerts. I just think that's really crazy. Guys like Freddie Freeman is at 14. If Freeman didn't get hurt, where would he be right now? He would be one of the best players in baseball, and I firmly believe that. So I think that's a little crazy for me. For the most part, it's hard to mess up these top so many lists just because of it's really easy to figure out which talent is near the top. I think Miguel Sano is probably too high at 15. I'd have him, I don't know, 10, 15 spots below that, but he's still really good. So for the most part, it's not too crazy up top, but there are a few pieces I can nitpick.
Yeah, the main one that Van didn't touch on that I'm going to nitpick is Clayton Kershaw. And I think one of the things, especially when you're doing a dynasty, is it's okay to take guys that aren't early 20s. And you know, it seems like Clayton Kershaw has been around forever. He's 29. So and he's the clearly, the, I mean, he's it's arguable, you know, him and Scherzer this year. Scherzer's been amazing, but Kershaw's been Kershaw as well. At 12, I think he needs to be inside the top 10 because at 29, you're still going to get – at the very, very least, as long as he stays healthy, three years of elite production. And in a dynasty league, to me, I'll take that 3 years of elite production over, you know, because I think a lot of times in dynasty leagues, you lose sight of you're actually trying to win the league. You're not trying, you know, you get so caught up in trying to stockpile prospects and get the next new shiny toy that's coming out and trying to get those guys that you want to be the smartest guy in the room because nobody else knows about him. But at the end of the day, you know, you miss out on the Jay Bruces. You miss out on the Clayton Kershaws in some respects where those are guys that are going to help you. And I don't think 29 is old by any means, but I definitely think he belongs a little bit higher than he is. I think he definitely belongs ahead of Trey Turner, like, you know, like Van said. So he's the one that I would probably nitpick the most out of those that Van didn't mention.
Yeah, I think you guys pretty much hit on all of them. Xander Bogaerts, like I said, yeah, is the one that sticks out to me. There's a couple other guys that I definitely rather have in there, but I'll just, you know what, I'll turn it back over to you then, Van. Just give us some of the picks that you take umbrage with, and please take it easy on your keyboard.
Well, first and foremost, the one I take probably the most umbrage with is at number 16 is George Springer. He's a top 10 player to me. Look at what he's done this season. 310, 380, 613. He can homer with the best of them. He walks at a decent clip. He's 27 now. He's young. I really, really, really like George Springer, and I would have him in my top 10. I think that's, again, splitting hairs because he's at 16, but that's definitely a big one there. Nomar Mazara came in at number 31 above names like Anthony Rizzo, Gary Sanchez, Christian Yelich, even Gregory Polanco. I think that's just absurd. Like, I understand Mazara's young, but I just don't think the tools amount to a number 31 overall pick in something like this. And then one more I'll say now, and I'll let Ron talk for a bit, is Alex Bregman at 50, I think is putting too much faith in him. And I think we've seen that maybe he's not the elite level talent that he is. I could still see him being top 100, but 50 just seems just way too faithful towards him. I mean, look at what he's done this year and tell me that that's a top 50 player. Obviously he's going to improve, but I don't see him doing that at least for a couple more years. Like maybe in a few years, he'll be in the top 50, but not right now for me.
Main one that I had in the next few is Billy Hamilton sitting at 40. I don't know how you put Billy Hamilton right ahead of Cody Bellinger. We've talked about Billy Hamilton on here quite a bit, and yeah, he steals bases, but that's about all he does, and he doesn't get on base at a very, very good clip. And so I think we're kind of waiting on that to happen, and it hasn't happened yet. So he's probably the first one on there that I would have a little bit of an issue with. When you move down a little bit, Victor Robles at 48, I like Robles a lot as a prospect. I'm not seeing him at 48 though, especially, I don't know if he should be ahead of Bregman. I don't know if he should be ahead of Brendan Rodgers. I don't know if he should be ahead of a few guys that are sitting there. Rafael Devers is sitting there at 60. As I scroll down a little bit more, I'd like to see Lance McCullers. He's a guy that I talked about in the last list that I'm going to target in the second half of the season. I'd like to see him a little higher than 96. I think, you know, I kind of pointed out his stats a little bit earlier, and he's a guy that should be up a little bit higher. I'm looking for – do you guys see – because I had him – oh, I think Noah Syndergaard
should be higher. He's 24, I think, right?
21,
yeah,
and he actually dropped a couple spots, which the injury. I mean, I could see that, but still, I'd have him way higher than that. I think he's knocking on that door of that Scherzer, Sale, next tier. So I think he's a guy I'd put a little bit higher up on the list. And the
one reason I would take Syndergaard over both of those guys is simply that he's in the National League. I think that alone gives him a benefit to put him ahead of them.
I agree. Last one I'll point out real quick. Actually, a couple. I'll just point out the numbers. I won't go too deep into them. Jose Quintana at 116. No thanks. A guy that Nate pointed out a few weeks ago that I've really got on board with since he pointed him out. Juan Soto is at 154. I think that's a pretty fair spot, but he's a guy that I'm glad to see that high on the list. Another guy that I think should be a little bit higher based upon what he's done the last couple of years, if you really look at the numbers, is Adam Duvall. Adam Duvall's at 179. I think I'd give him a little bit of a bump just because of the power aspect. Not a complete player, but the numbers are better this year. The last one there that I thought was good that I like to see in a top 200 was that we talked about Brett Honeywell a little bit earlier, and I think he's kind of right there. Another guy that I wanted to point out real quick, though, and he's far down on the list, and he's a guy that I had never – I think I heard his name in the draft conversation, but I never really looked at his numbers. It's another Milwaukee middle infielder, Keston Hiura. 442 is senior year in college. He's playing rookie ball this year, hitting 405 in rookie ball. And I don't remember exactly. He's kind of far down on the list as far as where he's at, but he's a second baseman in the Milwaukee.
213.
Okay, there you go. So just right outside the top 200, but he's a guy to put on the list as far as because he's ranked a little bit ahead of the bounty hunter, Bo Bichette, at 264. So that's pretty much what I had. I just want to add in real quick, my boy Mauricio Dubon is on there at 408, so he's actually on the list, so that was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, Hira is going to need Tommy John, so I'm not sure if he's going to have that now or wait till the off season.
Okay.
But I know he was drafted
in there, and I didn't see if he had it or he is going to get it or how that works.
Yeah, I don't know either. I haven't heard. And
but he's not going to help you anytime soon anyway, so he's a good stash in deeper prospects.
Yeah, he's like, in all my leagues, you can't pick him up anyway. You got to wait until next year and draft him.
Yeah, right.
So it does. We'll know a lot more by then, for sure. Yeah, there's a couple, like you said, Robles at 48. That actually is a bit high for me. Like, granted, he's an elite prospect, so maybe you just draft a guy to trade him, you know, that kind of thing. That often works out in dynasty leagues, but the way that I'm drafting, especially nowadays, a lot of the really good hitters that are out there right now, they're not like 32, 34 like they used to be. They're young, they're in their prime, they're in their mid-20s, and so I think you have to adjust your dynasty drafting a little bit, just because you don't have to worry about the old guys so much. And man, I tell you what, we drafted dynasty like 4 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. And I traded for Robinson Cano shortly after that. And man, like, once you have a guy that's over 30 in a dynasty league, he's just now impossible to get rid of, because it's changed to such a young player's game now that I think more than ever, you're just drafting these young guys more than ever. Like, the only person, I think the only player that is really high on here that's sort of older is like a Scherzer. You know, the rest of these guys are pretty much in their prime. You know, you said Clayton Kershaw's 29. He's getting up there, but he's Kershaw, yeah. So that's a little different. Yeah. You know, but
I know what you're saying, though, with those guys, because like I always allude to that 19 teamer, and I've got Robinson Cano in that, and it's one of those things that I'm trying to go for it. I think I'm ranked 6 right now. It's a roto, but you're gonna have to just have Cano until he just falls off, and you have to end up dropping him, because nobody's gonna give you anything worth value for him. The only situation you might be able to do that in is if you have a maybe a team that's in second or third and they're really trying to go for it, and they might give you something that's halfway decent. But still, when you look at that age in that type of league, you're exactly right. You're stuck with those guys. So you like the production, but at the same time, you got to kind of have that in the back of your mind. Okay, I got about maybe another year and a half, 2 years of this, and then I'm just going to have to deal with it and figure out what I'm going to do with them.
Yeah, no, a prime example, by the way, in the Dynasty League, the initial draft of a player not going when he should was Adrian Beltre. I think he was out there until like pick 150 or something absurd, and that was 4 years ago. He was old then, but I mean, he's put together four really, really good years. So even us who are, quote, experts on it all, we still kind of tend to do that. And I think that's crazy. I think that's a good way to win your leagues now is pay attention to these prime guys, these 27 to 30 year olds, because the prospect towns are so adamant that they won't draft anybody unless they're 19 years old. And that's so crazy to me. I mean, that's basically my whole main complaint about this list. Other couple of names on there, Yoan Moncada, 34, Victor Robles, 48, Brendan Rodgers, 55, Ahmed Rosario, 56, Devers at 60, and then a guy like Ian Happ, who's already shown that he can perform in the majors, he's at 101. I don't necessarily know off the top of my head how I would value all that, but a guy who's already shown that he can at least somewhat hit major league pitching is more valuable to me than a guy who hasn't shown that. And maybe that's just the cranky old man aspect of it, but I just think it's crazy how prospects are being valued this day and age.
Yeah, and the way that I draft personally is like, you know, I'll start off with several rounds of major leaguers, even elite prospects I don't really care too much about for the first couple rounds. And then if I'm to the point where there's an elite prospect or two still sitting out there to tempt me, then at that point I'll take them. But after that, I'm pretty much avoiding prospects until you're really into the dregs, because these guys, especially if you actually pay attention to the farm systems, you know, in the comings and goings, you can pick these players up. They pop up all the time. And so all you have to do is be the first to click on that name, you know, or put in the waiver wire claim for them. And you're going to slowly be upgrading your farm system consistently, and you don't have to lose out on all these great major league players that nobody wants because they're all drafting, you know, 16-year-olds who are playing in the, you know, Dominican Summer League and aren't going to see the baseball diamond for 7 years. You don't need to waste your time with that, especially catchers. Like, with me personally, I'm not a guy who really gives a crap about a dynasty catcher because they take so long to round into form. That came around to bit me in the ass on Gary Sanchez when I traded him away, but I think he's more the exception than the rule. And then another thing, touching on what you said about like Hamilton versus Bellinger, Ron, I think that's just a comment on, you know, the state of the game today. With even though Billy Hamilton clearly is not a well-rounded player, just those elite stolen bases are worth so much in a roto league. And Bellinger, he gives you what is plentiful these days, power and, you know, on base. So I'm not saying that I would necessarily draft that way. I would rather draft Bellinger. But I think that's why, you know, if I were to justify the ranking for them, I would say that's why. I think Judge at 28, to get back to some individual players, that's still too low for me. I'm bought in on him. I think I would have him in the top 20. I think I'd rather draft him than someone like a Max Scherzer, even though I do draft to win. Like, he's getting up there, you know. He's got some miles on that arm now. He throws really hard. So, I would rather have me some Judge a little bit higher than 28. And then, like, Rodgers, Brendan Rodgers, Ahmed Rosario, those guys are knocking on the door, so I get them at, like, 55, 56. But still, I'm not taking those guys there. That's too early for me. And then you have Dansby Swanson at 66 and Chris Archer at 67. That flabbergasted me. Like, Dansby Swanson is way too high. Archer is an ace right now. And are you drafting Swanson there just because he's young? Like, he's not going to be an elite player. He's going to be an all-around contributor. You know,
he's
going to
be a better real-life player than a fantasy player, I think.
Sure, he should be probably in the top 100. But not in front of Chris Archer, my goodness. And then perhaps the most disrespectful thing I've seen in all my years on this planet Earth is Jose Ramirez at 93. 93? You're going to do my boy like that? He needs to be way higher than 93.
You know, he's only like 25. That's the insane part about that guy. He's so young. And I will always credit you with being the guy who kind of figured him out and was hyping him before anything else happened. So he's an elite level player, and he's definitely not getting the love he should be shown.
Thank you.
What do you guys think about Schwarber at 62? Too high, too low?
Way too high. I wouldn't touch him there. No way.
No. Okay.
He's got to have a position and better skills.
Yeah, I do agree it's too high, but I think a lot of people have completely written him off already, and
that's true.
Pendulum has swung too far. So I still think he's a top 100 guy for me. And then just the last guy that I want to mention before we move on, Jonathan Lucroy at 138. That's still too high. This guy, he has completely changed his batter ball profile and his like approach to play. I just don't understand it at all, and it's terrible for fantasy. And I don't know if he can go back. It's just such a weird extreme shift that I'm just not touching Jonathan Lucroy in any sort of dynasty league.
Mm-hmm. I want to throw a real quick couple of names out there for you, too. What do you think about Buxton at 68?
See, that's still a little high.
I think it's way too high.
Yeah, every couple of days, it seems like there's somebody posting about, he's turning the corner now. He had 2-3 hit games in a row, and then he strikes out 16 times in a row. You're like, shit, back to the well. But so I still think it's there. He just needs to put it together. And he's still super, super young. So I could see people drafting him even higher than that. But he's right behind Chris Archer. And I tell you what, between Archer and Buxton, I'm taking me some Archer.
Right. 216, 288, 306 is Buxton's line this year. No thanks. I've always said I don't think he's going to hit until he gets a little older. So I probably wouldn't be taking him until, I don't know, the 100, 120 range. But there is value to be had. I do think he still has a good career. Alex Reyes is still on there at 140. I get it, but I also probably wouldn't value a Tommy John guy that high. I think he can come back and succeed, but just the attrition rate's too high for that. Justin Bour at 214, I think, is too low. He's really shown that guy can hit. He started hit left-handers. I mean, he's one of those guys without a position because he's chunky and not good defensively, but, I mean, he's a good hitter, so I like him.
Max, I will say,
go ahead.
Just touching on Buxton again real quick because I can't let it go. stolen bases again, like the era that we're in with steals. He's 16 for 17 in steals right now. Even as bad with a 288 on base, he's still trending for over 30 steals, which has a huge place in our game right now. So,
and I think that's going to be his calling card. Even through all of these several years where I think he struggles, he's going to run.
Yep.
And obviously he's amazing defensively. Max Kepler's on there at 239. I think Kepler's doing just about what I thought he would, and I think he can be a better talent than that. So I think that's way too low for me. And then a big one for me, and this probably should have gone on my second half MVPs list, is James Paxton. He's at 124 on this list. He's really, really, really good. I think FIP has him pegged at like 2.7, 2.8. I think he has a whole nother level to him, and if he stays healthy, he could be in that upper echelon, and he could touch Chris Archer numbers, stuff like that. So I think that's a little crazy for him to be that low.
See, I think that's about right as far as I'm concerned. He's about 28. He's ever since he came off the DL, he's just been trash. That kind of worries me with the shoulder injury history and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he has solid offense behind him, but when you look at that short list right there in front of him, there's a few guys I might put ahead of him, but I mean, I put him ahead of Tim Anderson. I put him ahead of Quintana, definitely.
I'm a sucker for Quintana, so I'd still take him.
Vlad Guerrero Jr. at 115.
I wish you played my CBS league. I'd love to trade him to you.
Oh, trust me, I have Quintana everywhere, especially because I play in a couple dynasty leagues, and I've liked him for years and years. He's always been underrated. Don't tell that to Van. He hates him. But, this year, finally, he's just completely crapped the bed, but it's looking better. I think he'll have a good second half.
What I thought was interesting about Alex Reyes, man, was when you brought him up, as I looked at, because I like how they have, because they did this last list in March, and so they have on that far right column how many slots they've changed, and Alex Reyes has actually gone up like 57 slots despite the surgery.
That's bizarre. That
kind of interesting, yeah.
I mean, arguably nothing has changed with him, and yet he's gained 50 spots. That's crazy.
Yeah, maybe they say, oh, he had the Tommy John that all the pitchers have. Now he's got that out of the way. Let's raise him. He'll be fine. So you're going to touch on Guerrero, and then I think we'll wrap it up.
Oh, I just want to point out he's at 115. I think the love has gone a little too high. Yes, we all love Vladimir Guerrero, and I think this kid's going to hit, but he's still 18. I'm wary. I mean, this kind of ties into your spot of this is a guy who's probably not going to see the majors for several years, so really wouldn't bother it, particularly at that spot. That high. No thanks. There are plenty of names I would rather go after here.
See, I do have a soft spot for Guerrero. I love that profile. I think he might be one of the guys who's up when he's 20, you know, maybe 19, 20, like a Bryce Harper, and just hit the crap out of the ball. And who cares what kind of defense he plays? So I'm in fantasy. I'm stoked for Guerrero. I've traded for him in several, at least two leagues. Can't remember. Maybe it was even three. But yeah, I'm all about me some Vladdy. So that should make your cat happy. Okay, let's wrap it up here. Ron, let's start with you. Give us some streamers.
Okay, so as we talked about in the break, it's a little better than last week, I think. It was a little easier for me to find ones that I don't so much mind having my name with these this week, I guess, as we wanted anonymity last week after we gave these. First guy I got on Friday is Charlie Morton against your boys, Nate, at Minnesota. And Charlie Morton's a guy that just when he starts pitching well, I start to get on the bandwagon, and then he has a couple of implosions, and he's back to the old Charlie Morton of ERA in the high fours. But he's pitched well recently. His ERA is 3 at home. He's 4-1 at home, coming off two straight quality starts. Twins are hitting just .245 on the road, and he is 32% owned, so he's a guy you could throw in there. I threw out Mike Montgomery on Friday as well because he's only 12% owned. He is going against Baltimore, and Baltimore can hit some bombs, but they are hitting .251 at home. So we know that the Cubs offense can score runs in bunches when they want to. So he's somebody, if you can't get a hold of Charlie Morton, you could throw out there for 12% owned. Saturday I got Yohulis Chacin at home against the Giants, 1.47 ERA over his last three. And I think I picked on the Giants last week. They're not very good offensively. They're terrible at home, 28th in batting average, and he's only 18% owned. And then Sunday, the guy that I went with, a little bit higher owned, but I'm picking on the Giants again, Trevor Cahill, for all the reasons I went with Chacin above that, 3.38 ERA on a season, and he's only 31% owned in ESPN leagues, I think is what I went with this week. So Trevor Cahill on Sunday was the only one I had.
I have a few names for you. First off, I had Charlie Morton. You've covered him, so there you go. On Friday, we've got Zach Davies of the Brewers pitching against the Phillies. He doesn't strike out much, but he is 10-4 on the season. He's got a good offense behind him, and the Phillies really can't hit. So there's a decent spot you could pick up a win on. On Sunday, the Garzantula, Matt Garza, faces off against the Phillies as well. His record's not as good, 4-4, but he does have a sub-4 ERA. He's sitting at 3.98. And again, against the Phillies, that's a team that virtually anybody can beat in the right moment. So I think that's another option, maybe pick up a win on the end of the weekend.
There you go. Yeah, I had Davies down as well. He's been a little hit or miss, but a little more hit than miss lately. Speaking of hit or miss, Trevor Bauer is going to be the only other guy that I have to recommend then. He will be at Oakland on Sunday, and pitching at Oakland makes for a fun day. And he strikes out just a ton of dudes. He's 10 strikeouts per 9 so far this year. Let's see. What is his xFIP? It's much lower than his ERA is 5.24, xFIP 3.67. So you should get some strikeouts. Hopefully you get yourself a win, and you might not even get blown up in the process, which is about as much as you can ask for from a streamer these days. So with that, folks, I think we're done for this week. Everybody hopefully has enjoyed their All-Star break. It's about time to get back into the grind of baseball. Can't wait. Also, Game of Thrones on Sunday. Arguably more excited for that than the return of baseball. It's been so long. So until next time, folks, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.